Hi, this is James Hinchcliffe. You need more Front Wing.
Hello and welcome to another More Front Wing podcast. I'm Steph Wallcraft, joined as always by Paul Dalby, and we have several special guests for you this week. First, we're going to speak with the pole sitter for the 96th running of the Indianapolis 500. Very excited today to be speaking with Ryan Briscoe. And later on, we're going to also hear from Alex Tagliani about the situation with Brian Herta Autosport changing from Lotus to Honda and what effect that's had on his mentality going into the world's greatest race. Paul and I are also going to chat about Paul's weekend, last weekend at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where when he was there for qualifying. We'll also talk about the performance of the chassis and the engines, and we'll look a little bit ahead to race weekend and what we expect to see there. But first, we are honored and pleased to be able to take a moment with the pole sitter for the 96th running of the Indianapolis 500, Ryan Briscoe. Thanks so much, Ryan, for taking a moment out of your no doubt very busy schedule to speak with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you are the 17th pole winner for Penske Racing, which I'm sure is a statistic that you're thrilled to count yourself a part of, and also the very first Australian ever to win pole for the Indianapolis 500. Can you talk quickly about the pride that you must feel from being able to join those statistics?
Oh, it's great. You know, it's certainly great to do something, you know, special for Roger at the Indy 500, whether it be qualifying or anything. And you know, last year we got the pit stop competition, which was cool and great for the pit crew and everything, but getting pole is certainly top to that. I think there's one last race left to win for Roger there, but we'll see what happens next week.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your day on Saturday and how things went and progressed for you as the day went on. Did you go into the fast nine shootout thinking that you really had a realistic shot at pole, or did the fast time come not as a surprise, but was your performance over everyone else more than you expected going in?
A little bit. You know, I thought for sure we were going to have a shot at it, and to be honest, I thought I was going to be fighting it out with my two teammates, and in the end, it was you know, Hinchcliffe and Hunter Ray that came closest. You know, it was certainly my best run of the day. We'd had a few qualifier runs, and our first one of the day, which was through the qualifying line, we just wanted to put a solid time in that, you know, we would hope would be good enough to get in the fast nine. And after that, we went back to the garage and we looked over all the information we had from that run and freed the car up a little bit more. And the guys just did a great job preparing my car, and it handled exactly the way I would want it to over the four laps at the end of the day. I mean, it was just a perfect run and turned out great.
Ryan, I know you gave it, you know, 110% when you had your first run, your only run of the shootout, and then you had to sit there on pit road in your car while all the other drivers took shots at you. And I was standing there next to your car, and I can recall you just staring dead ahead. You could tell how intense you were, and your crew members were all very businesslike. And then there's Roger Penske, who looked like he was strolling down the grocery store aisle like it was everyday business. And really, the only person that seemed emotional wreck was your wife, Nicole. What were you thinking while James Hinchcliffe, he had three laps faster than you, and it was so, so very close. Could you hear the PA? Was your crew giving you the times on your radio? What was going through your mind as you just sat there and waited?
Well, I was pretty nervous, actually, you know, because I heard his warm-up lap was a 2:27, and a couple of things went through my mind at that point. You know, first I was like, wow, that's fast. But straight away I'm thinking, that's a big warm-up lap. And, you know, we'd sort of strategically been going a bit slow on the warm-up laps to look after the tires. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, well, he's got to do four more. You know, that's not easy. And he put his first lap up, and it was significantly faster than my best one. I think it was 3/10 quicker than my best lap, and thinking, oh gosh, you know, I'm going to have to go again here. His second lap was good, but it wasn't as good as my second lap. And in fact, his second, third, and fourth laps were all slower than my second, third, and fourth laps. And but even still, to the last lap, you know, I wasn't doing the math, but, you know, the whole crowd was on their feet, and I thought, I'm going to have to make another run of this. You know, there's no way he's not going to beat me here. And then I heard Dave Calabro come over the loudspeaker, and I think everybody there thought that Hinchcliffe had taken the pole. And I heard Calabro go, "You're not going to believe this." and it was the biggest feeling of relief that I've had. And I started to take my gloves back off, which I had just put on about on the second lap that Hinchcliffe was going around, because I was getting ready to go and have to do it again. So, yeah, it was pretty intense. And I took my gloves off, and though my hands were shaking just a little bit, you know, I was ready to go.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the engines a little bit. What do you make of the dominance displayed by Chevrolet in qualifying? And once the speeds come back down for race, do you think that the difference between the Chevys and the Hondas will equalize a little bit, or are you expecting Chevrolet to remain dominant?
Well, I'm hoping the Chevrolets remain dominant, but you know, in practice with the lower boost levels, it looks like the Hondas and Chevrolets have been very close. In fact, it looked like when we first unloaded that maybe we were down on power a little bit. So I think it's going to be close in the race. For whatever reason, it seemed when we were given the extra boost for qualifying, it favored the Chevrolet engine. So that was great for us, and it made for an awesome battle between Penske and Andretti Autosport. But I wouldn't count Ganassi out at all. I'm sure they're going to be strong in the race and right there on horsepower with us.
Well, Ryan, one of your responsibilities now is to bring the field to the green flag. Have you had a chance to talk to Bo Barfield, the race director, or to either of the gentlemen that'll start to your right in the front row and discuss the start of the race with them? I know a lot of people would like to see that traditional much slower three-wide start. Have you had a chance to look forward to that far yet?
No, I haven't talked to anyone about it yet. But, you know, I've been on the front row a couple of times and kind of know the drill, but, yeah, we'll certainly, you know, have the drivers meeting and talk about that and, you know, go through the procedures and so on Saturday. And then I'll have, you know, the rest of the day and all day, you know, all morning Sunday to prepare myself for the start. But, you know, it's a great thing starting on the pole. I'll be controlling my own destiny going into turn one, which is good. You know, it's not easy starting the 500 from mid-pack, and you never know what might happen in front of you. It's a tough place to be. So it's certainly an advantage being on the front row, and just look forward to getting the start. To getting the race started and getting into a rhythm.
Well, from another angle, have you had a chance to talk with of the Lotus drivers about what will happen when you and the rest of the fast cars will come up on them very quickly and fairly early in the run?
No, I haven't actually. You know, I'm not sure if, you know, there'll be the chance again in the drivers' meeting on Saturday to maybe talk about that a little bit, but, you know, sometimes it's not just them, and sometimes, cars go off in a race, and handling becomes a problem, and with the 97-degree temperature they're forecasting for Sunday, you know, it might not just be Lotus cars that you know, will be lapping, and hopefully I'm in a good car where I will be lapping guys, but I think we'll just sit down and talk about it and make sure that safety comes first.
Well, that leads into my next question for you. Do you have great concerns about the closing speeds with the Lotus cars in particular?
Well, I think, you know, we just all have to be careful, but I've done sports car racing before, and closing speeds are a lot greater there. You're not doing 200 mile an hour in those cars, but you know, I think it'll be fine, and, you know, the drivers there, though, not having a ton of, you know, IndyCar or Indy 500 experience, you know, Sean Alesi, he's a massively talented driver with a ton of worldly experience, and, you know, decades in Formula One. Simona, she's been in a good car at Indy, and unfortunately, you know, she's just having a bit of bad luck with not the fastest car this year, but she knows how it works, and you know, I have faith that they'll be able to handle the situation accordingly.
Well, Ryan, taking the issue of closing speeds just a bit further, the new DW12 seems to have a very different performance this year than the previous Dallara when it comes to running in the draft. Give us, if you would, a little bit of your experience when you've been running in race mode about the draft and how much stronger it is this year than what we've seen previously, and how will that affect the race?
Yeah, I mean, the car is awesome to drive. Like, it's, I believe, a huge improvement over the last car. And the practice runs we've been doing in race mode with traffic out there, it's been so much fun, just like passing all the time, back and forth, and I think we're going to be in for a pretty exciting Indy 500. Maybe that's not what I want, being on the pole position, lots of passing, but you know, there's no way around it. The car seems to draft up well, and you can follow pretty closely through the corners as well. So, you know, you can come off the corners close to the car in front, get a good draft down the straight, and make the move into 3 or 1. And we're going to see a lot of that on race day.
Well, now your next goal and your next thing to set your sights on is the win. What is it going to take this coming weekend for Ryan Briscoe to put his face on the BorgWarner Trophy?
Well, it's, you know, it's going to take a race of not making mistakes, being nice and smooth out there, you know, working on your car and being good at the end. And a little bit of luck on your side won't hurt either. So, you know, hoping that it all comes together, you know, I'm sure we're going to have a fun race out there. And it certainly would be a dream come true to, you know, be lucky enough to be the man to cross the finish line first.
Well, Ryan, we know that this week has certainly been a whirlwind tour for you. We congratulate you again on your pole position. We look forward to watching you this Sunday as you lead the field to the start of the 500. And we certainly appreciate, again, you taking some time out to join us this afternoon as we preview this coming week's 500. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, take care, Ryan. We'll see you this weekend.
And, Steph, it really is great to see Ryan finally break through and get a little bit of luck at the Speedway. It seems like he's had nothing really but bad luck since he came back to the track in, 2007, I think, was his first year back when he came with Luzo Dragon and drove that really nice-looking Norton security car. Then the next year he had the pit incident with Danica. Last year he had the incident with Towns and Bell. And it just seems like there's always some dark cloud that's been hanging over him. So it's really good to see him finally this year, maybe at least so far, at least in qualifying. He seems to have shaken that black cloud a little bit. Of course, winning the pole doesn't necessarily mean he's going to, you know, even perform well in the race, but I really think he is. He looks strong this year. He seems to be flying a little bit under the radar, and that tends to be a lot of times the guys that get surprised. I think back maybe a little bit to Buddy Rice in 2004. I think he won the pole, but a lot of people didn't really give him that much of a chance of winning the race. Lo and behold, he comes out, surprises everyone, and walks away with the big win. So maybe we'll see a little bit more of that from Ryan this weekend. I think he'd be a great champion, and you know, we'll see what happens.
Absolutely, we will, and we certainly wish him the best of luck. So, Paul, you were there last weekend.
I was.
Yeah. You want to tell us about it?
It was hot.
I'm sure it was.
Not as hot as I think it's going to be this weekend, but it was toasty. You know, especially, maybe it was a little toastier on Sunday. There wasn't much else going on to know besides the heat.
Nothing distracting.
Right. Let's just start with Saturday then, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very good pole day, I thought. It wasn't the best I'd ever seen. There wasn't quite as much bumping as I would have liked to seen to either fill out the first 24 or to get into the final nine. It seemed really once they went through the line the initial time, I don't know, without having the play-by-play in front of me, I don't know that anybody really went out for a second official run. Of course, Tony Kanaan was disqualified after his first, so he had to go back out. Sebastian Saavedra went back out because he blew the engine on the warm-up of his first run, but I don't know that there was anyone who withdrew a time and bumped either to get a more secure time at the end of the field or to get into the top nine. I think that would have made it maybe a bit more interesting. But I don't think we can talk about pole day really unless we start talking from the beginning about just the domination of the Chevrolet engine. I mean, it wasn't even close. It was a total, I mean, Honda has to think of pole day as a complete disaster. They were just completely embarrassed. I think Joseph Newgarden, who ended up qualifying seventh, but I can't remember where he was in the first session, if you will, but he was the only Honda driver to out-qualify almost any of the Chevrolet drivers. I guess eventually they out-qualified like Anna Beatrice and Sebastian Saavedra, but I mean it was complete domination for Chevrolet on Saturday. And I think Honda had to be a little bit embarrassed, I think.
It's amazing what that tiny bump, well, I guess it wasn't that tiny. It was a couple miles an hour difference, but it was amazing what that bump in boost did in terms of making such a huge difference. Because when you looked at the timesheets through the week, the Hondas and the Chevys were pretty nicely peppered throughout the timesheet. But yeah, when it came to Saturday, Chevrolet just took over, and you wouldn't have thought that the twin turbo would have been the one that would have benefited from that as much as the single turbo. So it's very, I mean, far be it for me to claim to have a technical explanation for that, but it struck me as surprising.
Steph, do you remember when IndyCar made the decision to increase the boost pressure? Was it before or after Honda had appealed to go through the whole turbo gate saga? Do you remember when that was?
I believe it was shortly after the original appeal.
Right. So I wonder, you know, Honda probably did all of their preliminary tests to say, hey, look, these turbos aren't running equivalent. You have to wonder if they only tested those at, what was it, 130 kilopascal, I think, is what the original was, and they bumped it up to 140.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if BorgWarner, who actually builds the turbos, the spec turbos, if they had run their comparisons at 140 or if they only ran them at 130. Is this a turbo issue as Honda claims it was previously where, you know, Honda claims the turbos, what the performance difference was. Was that performance difference solely at 130, and was the performance difference greater at 140, or is the Honda engine just not as receptive to that higher boost? It'd be curious to hear from Honda how that whole sequence of events went down, or if they were expecting this type of performance difference on pole day.
I wonder if we'll see Turbo Gate Part 2.
The good news is that in the week leading up to it, when everyone was on the 130 kilopascal boost, which I think somebody explained to me, I think 130, you're talking about 41 and about 41 and a half inches is what in my old brain still thinks of from the previous iterations of turbochargers. But in the week leading up to it, when we were using the 130 kilopascals, the engines seemed to be very evenly matched. We saw several days where Joseph Newgarden in the Honda for Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing was the fastest car out there. Now, of course, some can say, oh, well, he took advantage of the draft. But guess what? You know what? Race day, there's going to be a draft out there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a complete apples to oranges comparison. I think it's relevant to look at those draft speeds. And the Hondas were very strong, as were the Target Chip Ganassi cars were very strong. Graham Rahal was strong. Charlie Kimball was very strong. So I think Honda, come race day, is really going to have a good engine. And I don't think the disparity is going to be near as great come race day as what we saw in qualifications.
Well, if we want to talk about engines that maybe aren't going to have the speed, is this a good place to... Maybe, yeah. Well, is this a good place to talk about the Lotus issue? Do we even want to broach that?
I mean, what is there to say about Lotus? I would say it's going to be a long day, but I fear it's going to be a really, really, really short day.
Yeah.
You know, you feel bad for them.
Do you? Do you really?
Okay, I feel bad for the drivers. Simone and Silvestro deserves more than that. Yes. HVM Racing deserves more than that. It's hard to feel
Simona
bad.
Simona has had a rough go at Indianapolis. It's just not been kind to her.
Oh, no, it hasn't. No. She and her attitude through it all, both last year with the crash that resulted in the burns to her hands, and the deal this year with the Lotus engine, she's been great through it all. I mean, her mindset and her attitude have really just been exemplary, and you haven't heard her really get down on the team, get down on the engine, get down on her equipment, get down on her luck. She's continued to be a trooper through it all, and you just hope that something comes around where, you know, maybe next year she's in a much more competitive ride and can really show again how good she can really be in these types of race cars.
Well, let's hope that she's not one of those drivers that has a maybe next year every year. Because there certainly are a few of those still floating around. And then there's the whole Jean Lacy situation. And, I mean, I was very fortunate to get the opportunity to speak with Mr. Lacy during the media day in Toronto earlier this week. And I think, I don't want to put words into his mouth, but the sense that I got was that he's pretty happy just to be there. I don't think that he had grand expectations going into the month, but he certainly had higher expectations of the engine than what there's been. And he's been given the freedom, despite being the brand ambassador for Lotus, he's been given the freedom by them to speak his mind, which is nice. Because he has said a couple of things that have been more critical than I would have expected for somebody who has been hired to be an ambassador for the brand. But he indicated on Monday that there were possibly some changes coming to the engine. Now, Paul, you may know more about this side of things than me. I know that Lotus is being required to dial back to the 130 kilopascals of turbo that everybody else is, but Simona had an engine delivered shortly before qualifying, do I understand this correctly, that had some changes in the electronics or something?
Yeah, I think it was an electronic. I don't think it was the parts that have been sealed. I don't think anything in there, I don't think any car allowed them to make changes there. My understanding, and I don't have a much better grasp than what you have, my understanding is that this was more of an electronics issue, that just a more efficient engine. Now, whether or not, do you know, is Jean going to get that engine for race day?
Well, it's interesting because what Jean said was that they had found, his words were now his English wasn't fantastic, but his words were that Lotus had found a second step beyond what they had sent for Simona, and that engine was supposed to be arriving in time for the race, and that was going to bring another increase in speed. And at the time, I wasn't clear on whether he was talking about the boost increase from IndyCar, but clearly he wasn't, because that story came out today that IndyCar is not going to be allowing it. So, and I wish that I had a way to go back and follow up on this for some better clarification, but I don't. But the impression that I was left was that there was something other than boost that Lotus was going to be doing to give themselves a little bit more speed in the race, and that they were expecting delivery of that later this week.
Well, hopefully. But, I mean, even the increased engine, Simona's still 12 miles an hour off the pole speed, and I mean, she's...
Oh, yeah, I don't think we have any grand expectations that they're suddenly going to be running with the Hondas and the Chevys.
Right.
They're going to be in the way.
The hope is their engine is competitive enough to not be dangerous,
mm-hmm.
which is a sad, sad commentary on their engine, really.
It is, and it would be interesting to find out from Bo Barfield exactly what his tolerance is going to be. Because I'm sure he has a number in mind, but he hasn't actually said it out loud, as far as I know. I haven't seen it if he has. But I know that 105% number has been floated around quite a bit. I think that's a good starting point, but I'm sure that he'll not to use the dirty word discretion, but I'm sure that he will be watching what's going on track and watching in particular the closing speeds and how the two drivers are reacting to the cars around them. And Jean Alesi and Simona, of course, both are consummate professionals and will deal with the situation as well as can be hoped, and I think. But there's definitely a risk that they're going to be seeing the old black flag before too long.
Well, and there's also there's just the experience level from Jean Alesi.
Well, that's, you know, when we were talking to Ryan, that sort of gave a little bit of a glimpse into the attitude, I think, within the field this year. And that's something that's shifted a lot over the last couple of years. You get the feeling that the drivers have a lot more confidence in each other this season than they have in the past little while.
They do have within each other that they're with on a regular basis. I mean, there aren't that many guys in the field. Take out Jean Alesi, take out Brian Clausen. Really, the list beyond that's pretty short of the guys that they're not familiar with racing week in and week out. Mm-hmm. Even Townsend Bell has enough experience and has run with these guys enough. They kind of know what he's going to do and how he's going to react. Jean Alesi has never been in a situation on an oval, A, on an oval period, but B, on an oval where he's so slow and the guys are going to be going by him left and right constantly. As soon as they get into traffic, he's not going to be out of traffic until a yellow flag comes around. So it's a very, very different experience for him. And I don't think he's ever been in anything like this situation.
No, but he also has 20 years of extremely high-quality driving experience, even though it's not on an oval. I don't think anyone in the IndyCar paddock has a fair reason to look at Jean Alesi and say, oh, that guy's a hack. He's not going to be able to cut it.
I don't think anyone, no, certainly not saying he's a hack by any means, but at the same time, he doesn't have experience being the super slow guy getting passed on an oval. I mean, even when you're slow on a road course, how often are you getting lapped? I mean, a couple times a race by the leader? I mean, if both Barfield allows these guys to go for much distance, he could be getting lapped every 10 to 12 laps in that ballpark. And it's going to be people constantly coming up to lapping him in that time period. It's just a very different way to be slow. And I don't know if that makes sense or not.
No, it does. It makes perfect sense. You know what? Maybe we'll see him park himself.
We very well could. And that was kind of my thought when he came out. It came up in the Jenna Fryer article, and I don't know if he said it to Jenna or if she just picked up on it when he was saying, you know, hey, if I can't get this figured out, if I can't speed up here, you know, maybe I need to look at not following through with this. And I'm paraphrasing there. I don't have the exact quote. And then people started talking, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't allow Lotus to qualify. Or it's not safe that these guys be on the track. And suddenly they're talking like this is an unprecedented situation. The fact is, I don't...
Are you going to go on your engine rant again?
No, not necessarily. I'm just going to say I don't buy the fact that our drivers now are lesser talented than what they were when this was the norm. And to talk about changing the rules at Indianapolis, or to talk about allowing... Okay, yeah, I am going on the engine here a little bit. Allowing Lotus, and there was the big talk coming up that was finally squashed today by IndyCar. It said, you know, everyone has to play by the same rules here. You're built to the same rules. You're manufactured to the same rules. You're going to race to the same rules. To insinuate that Lotus needs more horsepower, needs more boost, based on the opinion of a man that had been at Indianapolis for 3 days and had 3 days of testing experience on an oval, to me that seemed completely out of bounds. And I'm glad that cooler heads prevailed. And if the fact is that Lotus and Jean Alesi and Simona DiSilvestro cannot maintain a competitive and safe speed, then it's time for IndyCar to act. And I have no doubts that Bo Barfield will do that. I don't think Bo is going to allow them to be out there if they're 15 to 20 miles an hour off the pace.
Well, I think you're right. You do get the feeling that he's not afraid to put his foot down when he feels it's necessary. So we'll just have to see if he has the same idea of feeling that it's necessary that the drivers and the other observers of the sport do.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Well, this seems like a good segue into our chat with Alex Tagliani. Alex, of course, was another driver who was part of the media day in Toronto. Hey, I should also let you all know where to find some of the other content from that stemmed from that media day, because there are a couple of articles that have been posted around as well. We had a Q&A with Simon Pagenaud that was posted to More Front Wing on Tuesday morning. And there's also an article about John Lacy that landed on IndyCar Nation earlier this week. So if you would like to pay a visit to IndyCarNation.IndyCar.com, you'll find that there as well. And, of course, the third driver that was sent to Toronto as part of the media tour was Alex Tagliani, who I had the opportunity to speak with for a few minutes, just to touch base on the beginning of his season, or lack thereof, and exasperation in his voice really says it all when he's talking about the non-start that he had to his year, and then the relief that came when the team was given permission by IndyCar to switch to Honda. I'll let him tell you this story, so I'll stop talking, and let's hear from Alex Tagliani now. Jeff Walcraft, ForefrontWing.com, sitting here with Alex Tagliani. Alex, what a trip it's been for you for the last little while. Let's look back to the beginning of the season, and really probably the best place to start is...
Look back, honestly, like, I want to forget the beginning of the year, like, so much. Probably the worst beginning of a season in my career, and it's really unfortunate because we have a great team, and we definitely just show it, you know, in the last few days where we switched to a new engine, and without even being fully prepared and fully integrated with the Honda people, we ended up qualifying, you know, second fastest Honda out there. So it says it all. But unfortunately, our championship is going to start, you know, like at Indy, and the first four, but three we did. One we didn't go because we didn't have an engine anymore. We had, like, you know, DNF or blow up at pretty much every race, so it's just not even, like, worth, you know, commentating about it, because our team is much more capable of that, and it was a fluke of a situation to be in from to start with, and I think we belong with Honda at the first place. So we are where we need to be now, and hopefully it's gonna you know, help our situation, and we're gonna be able to catch up.
Yeah. Can you talk about the disappointment and what that does to your psyche as a driver to not be down in Brazil while the rest of the series is running?
I was like devastated. I was really devastated because honestly, it was really important to me. It was something that you know, I was really looking for, you know, tremendously, and unfortunately, we decided to change engine, and we basically had to give up, like, you know, the Lotus package, and from that standpoint, it was the best decision in a certain way, but it made us miss another race. So, you know, we kept accumulating, like, no points, and so it's been a pretty tough way of starting the year, but now I think it makes us appreciate more where we are.
Absolutely. Talk about that, the moment when you learned that you were going to have a Honda behind you. What went through your mind at that moment?
First of all, I mean, I was with Honda when I was on the pole last year, and so many good memories with them. I mean, I know all their people, and great relationship. So honestly, like, when I start driving the first time out there on the track, the first day, I felt like I never left, you know. So it's just, you know, like, the only thing that reminds me that I was not with Honda for the first four races is when I look at the points. So I'm looking forward for I'm definitely looking forward to the rest of the year. I think we're gonna you know, probably be much better, but also much more appreciative of our new position.
Absolutely. Now that you've had a bit more of a feel for the GW12, now that you've actually had something behind you that can give you a bit of a push with it, how are you finding it, especially in speedway trim? Are you comfortable?
No, I'm so excited about this race now. I'm like, I can't wait, just because yesterday was our day where we really evaluated our car, like in race trim.
Yeah.
And I feel so much more competitive and very racy. Our car looks really good, I think, in speedway trim. I'm not going to make any prediction, but I think we have a very, we're in it, you know, like, to win for sure. We have a fair shot at it.
Great. How are you finding, a lot has been made by the drivers about the enormous draft that these cars have, and that you can pull up really nicely, and then you get the heavy busting coming out of the dirty air, and then you can make the swing around. How is that affecting you personally in the car?
Well, it's there for everyone. There's some buffeting, there's some pretty heavy turbulence, but I think it's probably going to also make it for a good show. There's going to be a lot of action until the last moment, and I cannot even imagine how this race will end. If someone has the magic way of seeing the end result, like, I'm going to go to Vegas. But I think it's going to bring a lot of excitement, and I hope that we're going to get the best out of it.
So you kind of already covered your goal for the weekend. Obviously, every driver's goal entering the Indianapolis 500 is to win. But realistically, what are you expecting out of this weekend?
Sure. I mean, nothing less than winning. I mean, I honestly, starting from 11th, having a good car in the race trim, be competitive. There's no reason why we can't compete and run up front with everyone and just be there. So what's going to make the big difference is basically, like, you know, how many mistakes people make in the race, running a clean and free problem race, making sure that you're there at the end to give yourself a chance to compete, and most importantly, like, just survive. You know, it's going to be a surviving race. And if we can accomplish all these things, I'm pretty sure that we'll look good again.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time, Alex.
Thank you.
Good luck next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was great to get the opportunity to speak with Alex Tagliani on Monday, and he really seems a little bit like he's got a new lease on life, so to speak, now that he's...
New lease?
And, nice. Yeah. You like that one?
Sorry.
That's okay. He'll be one of those, of course, who's enjoying the Honda engines and possibly some renewed parity with Chevrolet, we expect, once the boost comes back down to 130 kilopascals. What do you think, Paul?
I hope so. I hope the race, like we talked about earlier, I hope it's more competitive than the qualifying was, or it's going to be the Penske's with the Andretti's dealing this out between the two of them.
Not that that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, I mean, you're still talking, you know, three Penske and realistically three Andretti. That's six guys fighting for the win, but...
And three guys that are highly popular and haven't been battling for the win for the past couple of years.
Very true, very true.
Anytime you've got an Andretti toward the front at Indianapolis, it's a good day.
I agree, but it would also be nice to throw the target Chip Ganassi guys and Graham Rahal, Joseph Newgarden. Like I said, I still think he could be a player in this. I know it's very cliche to say this is as open as it's ever been, but if the Hondas come back to the fold, or the Chevrolets come back and are competitive with the Hondas, you know, we could realistically see 15, 18 guys. Even the Dale Coyne guys, I mean, they looked competitive. There are very few cars that haven't looked competitive during this month. So, you know, if the Hondas are back on par with Chevrolet, then I think it's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be in the contention this weekend.
Well, not only that, but, I mean, you only have to go back 1 year to remember that Indianapolis is a place where anything can happen.
Absolutely.
And you can get the most surprising results out of the most surprising places. So there will be plenty to talk about by the end of this weekend, I'm sure. Hey, speaking of last year, now that I think about it, Don't forget, everyone, to pick up your white sunglasses on the way into the track. Is it lap 26 and lap 98?
That is correct, yes.
That we're going to be wearing our white brim sunglasses in honor of Dan Weldon, and I think one of the parade laps as well. So make sure that you take a moment to pick those up on the way in the track. I really like this idea. It seems a little bit cheesy, but I think it's something, it seems right up Dan's alley, this kind of tribute. Yeah, he would. He would think it was pretty funny. I saw somebody point out that, yeah, well, he just did that to serve his sponsor, but you gotta find your joys where you can. And, I don't know. It strikes me as one way that a lot of people can honor Dan all at once, and I'm certainly looking forward to seeing a lot of white sunglasses. I think Maddie and I are going to actually, my daughter and I are going to probably take actual white brim sunglasses and just wear them for the whole day. I'm not sure I trust those flimsy cardboard sunglasses with the heat that we're expecting. There's another topic we should discuss. How about that weather that they're calling for on Sunday?
You know, I sat through, oh, geez, well, we had 2006 was hot, 2009, 2010, and 2011.
2011 wasn't bad. 2011 was tolerable. 2010 was insane.
That was oppressively hot, yeah. I mean, they have been hot those years, and I don't think, if those officially cracked 90, it wasn't by much. And now we're talking about as high as 97, 98 degrees on Sunday.
I've seen some people say 100. I think this might be one of those situations where people are just playing telephone and exaggerating the number a little bit every time they talk.
Mm-hmm.
The official forecast on the weather ticker that More Front Wing is using in our event summary. By the way, if you need to see any practice timesheets from last week or any other details for the race this weekend, do check out our Indianapolis event summary. Everything you need is all there. I think our weather tracker that we're using says 92 right now for race day.
And to be honest, Midwestern meteorologists, and maybe this is just meteorologists in general, they tend to like to be a little bit apocalyptic,
mm-hmm.
especially around this time. So if they're going to say 97, 98, realistically, I think we probably expect, you know, during race time anyway, 91, 92, 93-ish, which, by the way, don't get me wrong, that's still hot, plenty hot. But I don't think it's going to be the heat that responsible adults won't be able to handle during the race. Certainly,
I think it's the irresponsible adults that people are worried about the most.
Well, yeah. You've always got them to worry about.
Yeah, don't hit the snake pit. Don't overindulge. Fill your cooler with as much water as beer, at least 50-50. And then you should be okay. Wear your hat, wear your sunscreen, all that fun stuff. And if you have any sign of trouble, let somebody know. This has been a public service announcement from More Front Wing. We look out for your people.
Well done, Steph. Well done.
Yeah, no worries. So, are we going to see 11 rows of three, Paul?
I think we have a better chance this year. I'm still not going to hold my breath for it. Nope. I don't think we... I think we might see...
Is Bo Barfield going to be the hero of the century if he does set us up with 11 rows of three?
I don't know. Probably, but I think realistically we'll get four or five, maybe six rows, but, you know, will we get 11? I don't know, I doubt it. We haven't had 11 rows of three.
I was about to ask you, there's a trivia question for you, Mr. Speedway. When was the last time that we actually had 11 rows of three all at the same time on the front straight?
I mean, you could go back to 1982. They looked pretty good before Coogan screwed it up.
That damn Coogan.
But, you know, people want to blame Barnhart for that. This has been failure way, way before Brian Barnhart. I saw a video today on YouTube of the start of the 95 race with the Stan Fox incident. That was a terrible start. And, of course, that was the last year of the cart era, if you will.
1986 was probably one of the worst ever, with Michael Andretti ended up leading into the first turn, and there were still several cars coming out of the fourth turn, straggling through there as he was going into the first turn. So, you know, it's certainly not a new problem, and it's not something that's just happened in the last 12 years, 15 years. It's something that's gone on for a long time, but, you know, at least as late as 82, we had a good alignment, and maybe 82 was the impetus for USAC and then IndyCar to be a little bit more lax with enforcing it, if you will. Maybe that really tight, rigid formation they found out, just in the grand scheme of things, maybe it isn't worth the risk coming to the green flag.
You're the last person I would have expected to hear that from.
No. I said I would like to see it. I don't think IndyCar is as concerned as we traditionalists are about it. And if it means that 33 cars make it through the first lap, you know, I am in favor of that, I guess. I hate to see cars wadded up on the first lap because people don't mind their P's and Q's trying to drive down the front straightaway and get into some formation before the first turn.
Right. Well, I certainly would like to see it, and I will be, not that I'll get to see it, because I'm going to be sitting on the back straight, if any, and I doubt very much that there's going to be a monitor nearby for me to check it out. But when I'm checking out the replay, I'll be saying, hooray, Bo Barfield, in my hotel room.
Well, the back straight, you were going to have the best view. If there is a good place to see the start of the race and the formation, it's on the back straight. If you ever see the pictures from turn three, I mean, they look like they're actually in parade formation. They're usually lined up very well there.
Yeah, there, exactly.
The problem is the first row usually takes off coming out of turn three.
Yeah.
That's why it's just a disaster from there.
Hey, here's something we haven't talked about since it was announced. What do you think of Guy Fieri as a choice to drive the pace car?
I like him.
I really do, too.
It's not controversial. I heard Kirk Cavan saying that he's a controversial figure. I don't see that.
Really?
He's an off-the-wall figure, but when I think controversial, I think Donald Trump.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think Guy maybe is going to rub a few of the blue hairs the wrong way. My dad, you know, our friend George Phillips may not be a big which, by the way, this is probably a really good time to send congratulations.
Congratulations to George and Susan, yes.
Who were wed this past weekend at the track.
And Paul had the honor of being the wedding photographer.
I did. I had a great time, and I was very honored that they asked me to be part of the wedding. And it was really a great time on Friday night. But, you know, George, who doesn't like change very much, I guess you could say, maybe this wouldn't be his first pick, but I don't see how it really ruffles too many feathers. He's got a nice demographic that he can preach to and really promote the race. It's not Parnelli Jones, it's not AJ Foyt, it's not Mario or some of the other guys that the guys from the 60s that are going to want to see. But, you know, if there is a marketing reach of the pace car driver, and I argue that there's not. I think it's a kind of goofy position. Not as goofy as the honorary starter, and certainly not as goofy as whatever Howie Mandel is doing this year. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't even know.
I don't know either. Whatever it is, it wasn't worthy of an IMS press release, I'll tell you. But if there
isn't he calling all drivers to their cars or all cars to the grid or something like that?
Basically what you just did is what he's doing.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why what that's about. But nonetheless,
You might as well just send out a press release that says Howie Mandel's going to be at the track on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly.
That's about what that achieves.
Yeah. But if there is a marketing reach to the pace car driver, I think Guy is a very solid choice for that.
I agree completely. And honestly, I watch very little television. I watch Motorsport and the Food Network, and that's about as much as I ever watch. So Guy Fieri is somebody who I'm actually very familiar with. And so that, I mean, not that most people are necessarily like me, but that's if somebody who watches as little television as I do in my demographic knows who Guy Fieri is and thinks that he's a good choice for a pace car driver, I think they've done a pretty good job. That's my thought on it, because if I know who he is, if you put somebody from the cast of Glee in that car, if you put somebody from, well, if you could put McDreamy in the car and I'd know who he was, but anybody else from Grey's Anatomy, I wouldn't have a clue. But as far as pop culture selections go, I think that I have to disagree with Kurt completely. I think that Guy Fieri is pretty vanilla. He's pretty generally well liked. He's got a fantastic reach, and the hope is, though, that he does turn around and find a way to tell his audience about driving the pace car for the Indy 500. Now, he's already been on Twitter talking to his followers about the fact that he's going to be in Indy this weekend, which on its own is a pretty good thing. I'm just going to check and see how many followers he's got, actually.
What I was just doing.
Yeah, I'm just curious about that. Let me see. He is 623,000.
So slightly more than you and I combined.
Times about 100. Yeah. Yeah, he's already said that he's headed to IMS for the Indy 500, and he used the account name and the hashtag. Look at him go. Yeah, so guy knows his stuff, and he's preaching to 600,000 people about it. It's not a bad thing.
No, not a bad thing at all.
No, good choice, I think. All right, well, I guess we should embarrass ourselves and make some picks. I've been saying all along Helios... Did I say that? I've been saying all along that Helios going to win the thing.
Sticking with him, huh?
I have to, because I don't like changing my picks, but I like the chances that my boy James has. I like them a lot.
You get your Maple Leaf out this weekend?
I am. I'm going to have one for myself and one for my daughter and wear them at the track.
You love waving your Maple Leaf.
I sure do. Well, and they've got that awesome shirt now with the silhouette of the car with the flags in it. Do you know the one I'm talking about that Lids has this year? They've got a Brazil one. They've got a... I'm trying to think. I know there's a U.S. one. I think there's a Scotland St. Andrews Cross one, too. And there's a Canada one. And I picked up the Canada one at Long Beach. And I like it a lot. So I'm going to
break up the little blue bag again?
No, the little blue bag is retired. I don't even know if I have that anymore. It's probably
in... You lose the little blue bag. There's history there.
No, I think it's in one of my suitcases that I never use or something.
Hmm.
No, the little blue bag, I can't even say it. The little blue bag is retired. It's not coming out. Anyway, the point of my little diatribe here is that I want to pick Hinch, but I can't because I already picked Elio.
I don't even remember who I picked, so I'm going to go out and come up with a new pick. If I had, seemed like I picked Will Power at the beginning of the season.
I think you might have.
Did I?
I think you shocked everyone. Did that. That's a point that we haven't made yet. Of the three Penske drivers, if somebody told you last week that a Penske driver was going to win pole, would you have picked Briscoe?
No.
Not a chance.
Yeah, Briscoe has a way of every year ending up in the rumors that his job is on the line. And every year when the rumors of his job is on the line, he comes and does something that shuts people up. Which is why Briscoe is my pick for this weekend.
Ah, yeah. Did you just make that up right now while you were talking?
No, it was in my Incarnation article right now.
That's true. That's right. Yes. Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. That's fair.
I think this is the year he shakes the bad luck from him. And if his engine goes 500 miles.
Which is a question for all of them.
It is. And it's a great question for all of them. I think it's actually going to... add some more intrigue to the mix this year. I really do.
Well, and it's been doing that across the board, but for the Indianapolis 500 in particular, but between that and the Oh, sorry, it's not called the Hanford device. It's called drafting. Between those two factors, I think a lot of the drivers seem really stoked, and I think we have a really good race to look forward to this weekend.
Yeah, I think I'll put this prediction out there as well. I think there'll be one contender that gets bitten by an engine bug this year.
Just least, one? Just
I
one?
There'll be at least one. I think.
Oh,
that
that's too conservative. I'm going to say three engines pop.
Well, three engines may pop, but I'm talking a driver maybe within the top five that really is in contention, running strong, really contending for the win, not someone that shuffles up in the top five on pit strategy. I think somebody that's running very strong all day, late in the race, within the last 100 miles, is going to have an engine failure.
Hey, are you and Dale Nixon doing your prop bets again this year?
You know, we had talked about it via email. Dale, unfortunately, is not going to be in attendance this year at the track. Mr. Responsible Homeowner now.
Some other
obligations he was saying he had to tend to. So hopefully we had talked about doing them via email. But time is starting to run short, so I need to follow up with Dale on that.
Yeah, it'd be a shame if you missed that. I think that's a really fun thing that the two of you do. But you do usually tend to do it during downtime in the media center. So
we typically do it the morning of the race, and it's kind of rushed and hurried. So maybe we'll get around to doing it a little earlier this year.
Yeah, well, let's hope we do see that, because that's always a lot of fun. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that we should?
Well, there's lots we could talk about, but I think we've at this point exhausted our time for this evening.
Yes, I think you're probably right. Well, for those following along at home, you can catch us all weekend this weekend. We'll be on Twitter, both on our own accounts. Field of 33 is Paul, 99 Forever is me, and of course there's More Front Wing, all of those being on Twitter. And we'll also be writing our daily reports for morefrontwing.com, so you can find those on the site. Please do follow along with us. We love sharing with you. We hope you enjoy sharing with us. And
if you do see us at the track this weekend, please do say hi to us. We both enjoy meeting our followers and the people that allow us to make our site happen. So please do, if you see one of us, track us down, say hi, and introduce yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, hey, and if you're going to actually, there are a few events that we can mention that I think either you or I are going to be at this weekend. There's the tweet up, the Brian Herta Autosport tweet up, 2:30 on Carb Day, and I think that's in the fan zone. Is it not?
I am not sure about it.
I'm like 95% sure it's in the fan zone. And last I checked, there were over 80 people signed up for that. So that should be a good one. If you get a chance to pop by for that, please do. Whether I'll be able to make it depends on how my daughter is doing at that point and whether she's going to let me. But I'm very much hoping to make it. Friday night, of course, there's the necessary event, the Carb Night Burger Bash at 96th Street Steak Burger, which is up at 96 and just a bit east of Meridian, if I remember correctly.
A bit east of it's between Allisonville and Keystone.
Okay.
So up on the northeast side.
Okay.
And so, actually, I think we've still got some More Front Wing t-shirts that we may donate to the kitty there. And also, I donated a piece into the auction, a piece that I had obtained a couple years ago, which is a piece of Dan Weldon memorabilia. If you recall, a couple of years ago at Sonoma, when he was involved in an accident at the start and kind of flipped his car over, I came into possession of the rear wing element of that with the National Guard.
Nice.
Car. And that piece of the damaged full-length rear wing, the second element of that car, will actually be auctioned for sale at the Carb Night Burger Bash. So,
wow.
If you're looking for an authentic piece of Dan Weldon memorabilia, it'll be available for a great cause.
Oh, you're a good man to give that up. I don't know if I would have been able to. Right. So between those and other events at the track, we do hope to see you. And I think with that, we'll call it a day. So remember, if you need IndyCar news and views, get a grip with More Front Wing.